Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Mary Beth Peters. Mary Beth is the Register of Copyrights. And joining us in our conversation is John Lanehart.
Mary Beth, you referenced earlier the anthrax problems in the Capitol complex. Can you explain how disruptive that was for the Copyright Office for us?
It was unbelievably disruptive. From the moment that there was a letter delivered on Capitol Hill to the Senate, to Senator Daschle, and then Senator Leahy, the entire Capitol Hill complex shut down for 6 days. When it reopened, no mail from the United States Postal Service was delivered to the library, and that mail was held. And it was held from the middle of October till April. So there were tons of letters, deposits, requests for services. And most people didn't know what happened to it, even though we put alerts up on our website. So we got no mail from the Postal Service. We told people we were still getting mail from UPS, and we were getting mail from DHL and FedEx, and that they could walk it in. But that really cut down on the amount of material that was coming in, and then people asking, where is it? That mail was irradiated. A lot of the material that was irradiated came in unbelievably damaged. The applications just fell apart. The deposit copies, if it was a tape, the plastic had melted into the tape. Totally unusable. With regard to the checks, some were stale, others were just destroyed. And we, when we started to get that, had to deal with all of that. And when it started coming in, it came in not in any orderly fashion. We're not sure how it came in, but today I still get Christmas cards. Yesterday I got a Christmas card from Mongolia. So we're still dealing with getting really old mail. When the new mail started coming in, that new mail went through an additional process. Not only is it irradiated, there is now an additional process for Capitol Hill where they test to see if there is any harmful substance, and that testing goes to Fort Detrick, and that is on top of the irradiation. So we still, with regard to mail that is sent today, will get it from 6 weeks to 3 months later. With regard to security, obviously there were issues. If you thought that material was coming in that had anthrax, we have one of the biggest mail rooms in the Washington area. The staff was extremely concerned about what was coming in and whether they were in any danger. So we had to do a lot with regard to staff awareness. We got gloves, we got masks. There were all kinds of things that we had to deal with that we never thought we'd have to deal with again. And what we know is that we'll never go back to the way that we were. And my only regret is that our efforts to re-engineer our processes wasn't further along so that we weren't getting more material electronically, because that's really the only answer to being in a government building on Capitol Hill.
Looking out, let me ask you about some of the other challenges that are on the horizon for the Copyright Office. As you were describing the issues of dealing with mail and paper, I thought, well, gee, everything will be networked. That'll be just great. But I can't help but think that that brings more challenges, too.
For us right now, a lot of the challenges are on the legal front. And they really have to do with the fact that copyright in the past has been territorial. It's U.S. copyright law for activities in the United States. Copyright owners were dealing with physical products for the most part, and they were able to control where those products went. Today, anybody can create a work. Anybody can steal a work. They can put it up on the internet. It can go to every country in the world. It can be changed so that, for example, if what you're writing about is how to treat a disease, and it's very important that there's integrity in that work, someone who has maybe perhaps less than laudable goals can change it to cause harm. All of these things have to be addressed. One of the things that we're looking at is what can the law do to basically make sure that people who encrypt their works so that they can't be changed, so that when you get a work, you know it's from an authorized source, that they have the mechanisms in order to have that measure that they used protected. We're coping with how do we basically determine what law applies to an act that may take place in the United States, but the server may be in China and the people who receive it are in Iraq. And those are the issues that I think we're going to have to struggle with, as well as the public. We really, if you're in the business that I'm in, you've got to make the public understand that there is a creator. A creator is important. He has to get paid some way. And the ability to control the use of his or her work and to keep it in the form in which he or her wrote it is something that our forefathers believed in. The Constitution reflects those values that says we need to encourage these people by giving them exclusive rights. But of course, there's a balance. The balance is the public. What kinds of exceptions should you have so that it's not too burdensome a system? And in an online world, that is an increasingly difficult task.
Many federal agencies are facing retirement of key personnel. What human resources issues has the Copyright Office taken on to address these concerns in the future?
Well, certainly a number of our jobs require a fair amount of training. If you're going to be a copyright examiner, the training is over a year and a half. If you're going to run the office, you really have to have a very in-depth knowledge of the United States copyright law, but also the laws in the rest of the world. I'm in my 38th year, and so my goal is, you know, to leave the office a much better place than I found it, and not only to make sure that the systems that we have work better and the technology work better, but that we have in place the people who are needed to do the job. So I'm trying to, at this point in time, bring in younger people whose goal is to work for the government and who see it as exciting and challenging and who are there and won't leave next year. And those are lawyers. But with regard to a lot of our positions, there is, in fact, a fair amount of turnover. People come, people go every year. So with regard to most of our jobs, I think that we don't have to have a special effort. We just hired, for example, 12 examiners, and we're training those 12 examiners. We keep our eye on the older people. We're trying to figure out ways in which we can, before they leave, gather their expertise and capture it in such a way that it can be made available to some of the younger people. When talented people who have been there a long time leave, there is a gap, and all you can do is figure out when people may leave and try to put in place a plan to make sure that you're developing the skills that they have that can be, you know, assigned to a new person.
Can you share some of those insights? How are you gathering the knowledge these more experienced people have to be shared?
I actually deal more with the lawyers. So I'll talk about the piece I know best. I've been hiring many new lawyers, and I've been spending personally an awful lot of time with them. And we've been actually creating some documents that we didn't have in the past that basically explain how you got to where you were. One of the things that I think our contractors know, when they were coming up with some of the BPR recommendations, I said, oh, that was suggested 20 years ago. And it was rejected 20 years ago because it's helpful to have someone who's been there and who's... So we need to archive more. We need to basically get people to spend time before they leave, you know, sharing with us the kinds of things that were unique that anyone who's going to do this job in the future needs to think about.
And our last question is, what advice would you give to a young person considering a career in public service, perhaps even at the library?
Both places are unbelievably unique. There's only one in the country. And the things that we do are worthwhile to the country. They serve important purposes. And in the copyright area, in the legal area, I can say without a doubt that if you're a lawyer and you're in private practice, there's no way you can do the kinds of things that you do working in the Copyright Office. You can't go and influence Congress in the same way. Yes, you can be hired as a lobbyist, and yes, you can go. But when you work for the Copyright Office, you've done a very in-depth analysis, much more than what most people do. You have no, quote, clients per se, other than the public. So you're looking at what are the benefits and what is the downside in Congress. You know, you make the decision, but here's what we think. And that's really unique. So there's a uniqueness to what we do. And I don't know. I think that certainly working in the Copyright Office, everybody identifies with the creative process, with authors, with their struggles. And that's a laudable goal. The library is one of the most unique cultural institutions in the world. And you can go in any nook and cranny, and there are curators, there are collections, there are functions that most people have no idea about that are challenging and exciting and important. The Congressional Research Service, that is the arm of Congress. People who work in that service have a unique ability, whether it's in economics or public education or law, to make a difference. So there is a wonderful ability in public service to make a difference. And the reward may not be monetary, but I think the challenge is exciting, and it's not maybe as secure as it was in the past, but there's a certain security in the public sector.
And that's the final word, because we're out of time. Mary Beth, John, and I want to thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Mary Beth Peters, the Register of Copyrights. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's very interesting conversation. Again, that's businessofgovernment.org. This is Paul Lawrence. See you next week.